Today's episode of the About Last Night podcast is brought to you by Gamefly.com. Gamefly has over 8,000 new releases and classic available games to rent from Xbox One, Xbox 360, PS4, PS3, PS Vita, Wii, Wii U, and 3DS, as well as the older systems. Now, as a Gamefly member, I can tell you that it's the easiest way to rent consoles or handheld games that you want delivered right to your mailbox for one low monthly fee. Gamefly also offers the ability to rent Blu-ray and DVD movies as a part of the regular service at no extra charge. If you want to start renting your games and movies the best way possible, go to Gamefly.com right now and sign up for a premium 30-day free trial. One game out specifically for viewers at the following URL, GameflyOffer.com/ALN, and get a free 30-day trial with Gamefly.com. All right? There's a lot of games out there, so why don't you make your life better and play them? And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Happy Thursday. Thanks for listening to the podcast, wherever you get it, iPhone, Android, your Stitcher app, or Laughable, the app. The ALN app is coming shortly, maybe aboutlastnightpodcast.com, wherever you listen to it. Thanks for subscribing and rating the podcast and commenting on the iTunes page. Do that if you haven't done so. And keep shooting us your ALN highlights, man. AboutLastNightPod@gmail.com. Send us a little note, why you got into the pod, where you listened to it, how it helps you get through the day, all that jazz. And we'll read some of those comments on the air and send you some merch to say thanks. Today's episode is a doozy. It's a fun one. You know why? Because it's a guy who's been here before. He's my neighbor. He's one of my best friends. He's an amazing comic. He has a new Showtime special out called Home Field Advantage that you got to go check out. And his show, I'm Dying Up Here, him, Eric Griffin, Al Madrigal, an amazing cast, produced by Jim Carrey on Showtime, Sunday nights, 10 p.m. I'm Dying Up Here, loosely based on The Comedy Store in the 70s. He's one of the stars of that show and crushes it. It's Andrew Santino. You know him, you love him. At Cheeto Santino on Twitter. This episode was just fun and really interesting. If you're a comic, you're going to really love this episode. Andrew really breaks down not only the making of that show, but just we get into comedy in the 70s and what that shit was like. And he really gained more perspective from Jim Carrey and just the whole experience of the show. Talking about his special, and we talk about Kathy Griffin and Trump a little bit. We get into a lot of stuff, and it's a lot of laughs, and it's the best, always. Andrew's the man. I love him. Enjoy this episode. Follow him on Twitter again, at Cheeto Santino, me at Adam Ray Comedy, at Alien Podcast, at Funny Brad, Brad Williams Comic on Instagram, at Alien Podcast on Instagram, Cheeto Santino on Instagram, Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram, aboutlastnightpodcast.com for your ALN merch, andrewsantino.com for all his tour dates. He'll be on the road. Check him out there. AdamRayTV.com, BradWilliamsComedy.com. I am in town, not this weekend. I'm in town Saturday through next Thursday, doing shows in Los Angeles. Check AdamRayTV.com for that. June 20th is the next Adam Ray and Buddy show. Go to ComedyStore.com to get your tickets for that. The lineup is going to be announced shortly, and it is going to be stacked. Brad Williams is next weekend in West Palm Beach, June 15th through the 18th at the West Palm Beach Improv in West Palm Beach, Florida. Get your tickets at BradWilliamsComedy.com. And I think that's it. A lot of great episodes coming up, like this one. So let's get into it. Now that we got the Twitter dates, the tour handles, the Twitter dates. Fuck. Here's Andrew Santino.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. It's about last night.
I would like to say I'm sitting here with three of Showtime's finest, but we got two. And that's a dig on myself.
T
Team, being like, hey, man, why don't you have a Showtime special yet?
Team Adam, Showtime.
Team Showtime.
Hey.
Yeah, yeah, pound it out, dude. Team Showtime. Wow, the official Showtime handshake. I just saw it live.
Oh, no.
You didn't know about that?
Yeah, we actually have another one that we can't show you.
Yeah, because it's like...
What does it taste like? I mean, what does it look like?
It's like the one that gets you into the...
It's on YouTube.
The Eyes Wide Shut parties that Showtime throws.
Yes.
Just the massive amounts of orgies and coke and money. They just hand you money when you have a Showtime special.
Surprisingly, no alcohol, though. It's just coke and orgies.
Right.
Can you imagine going to a party or wedding where they're like, yo, it's dry, bro. Like if Brad was like, dude, no booze. I'm sorry. Taco trucks, though. Taco trucks, but no booze. And then you show up and it's like all coke. He's like, why didn't you say no coke? Because I said no booze.
Yeah, booze. You think we can afford booze?
This coke was given. We're sponsored.
Yeah, we're sponsored by Coke, dude.
I thought you meant a cola.
Pure Colombian cocaine sponsors right. Showtime.
Now, I want to ask a real quick question, and already we're off on a tangent, but I went to a party my junior in college at a kid's house in my frat who... He lived in the neighborhood where, like, we drove through on a bus to his house where it was just like a night where he's like, I'm gonna have a party. His dad invented, like, the battery charger thing where you put the batteries in that thing and then you press it to see if it still has juice.
That's your buddy's dad?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
So we go to his place.
All the money.
He's driving up. He's like, oh, yeah, Denzel lives there. Shaq lives there. I'm like, oh, what does Snoop live there? He goes, no, 2 hours down, though. and so we get in there, and I don't smoke cigarettes, right? I maybe smoke 10 in my life, maybe 12, I mean, maybe like 30. And I'm still smoking.
I brought you a pack of cigarettes. Yeah,
I'm wearing a bunch of patches. So so there's a big bowl of cigarettes, though, out of like the pool house, just everywhere. It was like one of those things where he was like, instead of decorations, it was like bowls of cigarettes, like party favors. And just because they were there and free and a big bowl of them looked like a big bowl of gummy bears, I was like, I'm going to smoke tonight a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you're drinking, you're also in college, and also everyone's doing it. And I mean, it was the worst decision ever. I felt so sick because I'd never do it, and I was inhaling too much and like the wrong way, and I was saying weird shit that like I thought was cool and was creeping people out when I was smoking. And like, fucking, you guys think we should all take our dicks out soon? And everyone was like, what? I was like, Miles has a cool house, right? So my
cigarettes
question is,
do that to you?
Nah, I was just trying to add on to the story. So
cigarettes make Adam surprisingly gay.
So what I wanted, my question was, if you go to a party like that and there's something that's out there and it's free, that accessible, what would it take for you to not do it?
I guess it depends on your age, right? Because when I was in high school, anything, everything. If it was there, I was going to do it.
Yeah.
Like high school was just like...
Because you felt invincible and you're just like, why not?
And also, you couldn't get it that much. So when someone's like, dude, Steve's got mushrooms, you're like, we're doing mushroom!
Yeah.
It just didn't matter because you were like, it was so rare to get. But now, at this age of my life, like now if I go to a party... I feel like I don't want to do... There's nothing that would make me go, I got to do it because it's a once in a lifetime. Unless some scientist was there, was like, this is the only time we've done this drug, and I'm at some famous dude's house, and I'm like, if everyone's doing it, I'm
Well, that was my question. If you, because you're, you know, now, I mean, I feel like you're now at another level, and so I feel like parties, people... What if you end up at a party with Tom Cruise, and... That's me, sorry. You're at a party with Tom Cruise, and he's like, hey, man, I found this... Andrew Santino, right? God, I saw your fucking Conan set, man.
Oh, thanks,
man. Great.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, dude, really great.
Great.
Dude, I have these weird fucking, they look like Flintstone vitamins, but they're actually like antidepressants meets fucking heroin, man.
Uh-huh.
And look, I take them before every Mission Impossible stunt.
Really?
That's why I can fight underwater. That's why I can fuck Katie Holmes. That's why I can do all this shit, man.
Wow.
Do you want to go into that bathroom and take one with me?
I got to get out of here, Tom Cruise.
Hell
thank
yeah,
so
man.
Much,
so, yeah,
no,
that's
I
a maybe.
Go. Nope,
all right,
leave.
Cool, man. I'll see
leave.
You at your place later.
Nope, I'm going to be at the valet. Goodbye, Tom Cruise.
Wouldn't, huh?
No way, dude.
Yeah.
No way. I just, that's how I feel like you get trapped. That's such like an easy trap of a story that's like, and that's how he ended his life in Hollywood.
Yeah.
He was at a...
So peer pressure doesn't exist for you anymore.
No, dude.
High school, though, yes. And I think for everybody. Yeah. As it should, right?
High school, I was really bad about it. Also because I was like party animal guy, and so it was like... Santino's here.
I thought you were in college, but high school too, a little bit.
Yeah,
started somewhere.
It was just a decade of wasted. I think in high school, I was just so people were like, he's fun, and I was just down to do everything.
Yes,
yeah, because you wanted to be the fun guy.
I wanted to be the fun guy. Every comic wanted to be the fun guy.
So, yeah,
but then now I don't even want to go to the party because getting there is like a big thing. It's now at this point, I'd rather just go to someone's house where it's like four of us. Having a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A party sounds so exhausting.
To me, like now that I'm over the age of 30, it's like, oh, come on, man, you got to do this thing. Everyone's doing it. It's like, no.
No.
I know where this kind of goes, and I just want to go home and watch Netflix, and that's it.
Also,
there's so much good TV. That's an excuse to not go to parties. There's so much for me to watch. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to get out there tonight. I got five shows to catch up on.
When I haven't seen the season finale of Better Call Saul yet, so I got to do that.
And I haven't seen the first episode. So it makes me, actually, when I hear D'Elia's bit on, like, I don't want to go to your fucking party, that whole thing. I'm like, yeah, man, because also a lot of parties that we go to that aren't comedian-based, you know, then there's... You're fielding a lot of questions to people who aren't that are just like, have all the questions that you're like, man, there's like, you know, so what made you want to start? You're like, are we doing a podcast at this party? Or are you writing this down?
Actually, we are. This is my this is my podcast, pool party podcast.
Yeah, I mean, unless there's
a great name for it. Pool party podcast. You show up, you're on the podcast.
Yeah, come on, hang. We're going to be grilling burgers and just hanging, man. No, like, hey, no strings attached.
This
except for the one to the boom mic.
This burger has a microphone inside of it.
I just bite it, man. Be chill.
That sounds insane, but... It wouldn't surprise me.
Some comic is going to start it after this comes out. Some comic is like, pool party podcast got to happen, dude. We got to make it happen.
Yeah. Like, we're in California. It's sunny. It's sunny all the time. I have a pool.
You know what parties I hate going to for real, though, are when I go home. This is terrible for my family. When I go home back to Chicago and I've got, like, the family parties that we throw, which I love because I want to see all my family. But every time I go home now, you have to play Wikipedia. Like, I have to play Wikipedia. Mm. It's like, what's going on? And I have to divulge everything that I'm doing a thousand times.
Yeah, right.
But the irony is, people are so interested in your family, and genuinely so, because they love you. Whether it's cousins, uncles, friends, family, they're so interested in you and supportive of you. But then when you divulge what you're doing, it's almost like you've always let them down. Because you're like, yeah, dude, I'm doing this and this and this and this. And they're like, cool, that's cool. So when are you going back? It's almost like no matter what it is, it's not as they think it's going to be more insane of a story than it could be.
They expect to be like, well, I was at Catch the other night and I was, you know, talking with Kanye like we do, and then he says come over to the house and Paul McCartney's playing a recorder. I didn't know he could play a recorder. Like,
but was Ringo there?
Yeah,
Ringo wasn't there.
Oh, all right, we don't let him into the parties anymore. No, they want you to be picked up in a helicopter from the family party. That's the level they want you to be at, where it's like, I gotta get out of here, you know. There's Will Smith is picking me up in his chopper in our backyard. But if you were that famous,
you
don't have family anymore.
Guess what, your new family is Will Smith and his friends.
My mom and dad, you ever coming back?
No.
You losers.
No, ask Jada Pinkett real quick if I'm coming back. That's right, that was Jada. And that actually, that wasn't even Jada Pinkett, that was Jaden doing Jada Pinkett. That's right, I'm with all the Smiths. You know, it's like they expect, the expectations raise. Once you get a little bit of success, I mean, I find that with my friends and family, where they're like, what have you been up to? And I tell them like three or four things, you know, some things in the works, some things that are happening all the time. And they're like, cool. So, all right, let's just, when's the next movie? I'm like, I don't fucking know, man.
I'm not in charge of that.
I just told you a bunch of other stuff that feels pretty fun and cool right now. And they're like, yeah, man, but remember when you were in that movie? Yeah, man, still trying to do that shit.
Like I said, I remember... I don't know what member of my family asked me when I had first booked the pilot for I'm Dying Up Here 9 years ago when we first when I first booked the pilot. I remember a family member being like, dude, Jim Carrey? And I was like, yeah, it's awesome, man. It's pretty cool. And then they were like, is he in it? And I was like, no, he's the executive producer. He's like one of the, you know, creators. And they were like,
he's never done this before.
And they were like, oh, yeah, that sucks.
What do you mean?
You're bound to let people down.
Oh, yeah. How? It's one of the biggest comedy stars on the planet is the executive producer.
He's not in it.
Involved.
It's like, hey, what I told you is already pretty crazy. I'm your end to the business.
Nope.
Everything I tell you should be fascinating.
Not impressed. He's not in it. I'm not impressed.
Well, like,
they have their own set of standards for what is.
Yeah. Because, like,
what your experience in the business should be.
Yeah. My dad watches Charlie Rose all the time.
Totally.
So he asked me about once a month if I'm going to be on Charlie Rose. And I'm like, he's got, like, Putin's secretary on. Yeah. Like, right. I'm not. They're not like,
you're
and now,
next in line.
And yeah. It goes Putin's secretary.
I got bumped three times by Tiffany Trump. Yeah. That's who I got bumped by.
One of my 17 Aunt Kathys. Because if you're from Chicago, you have a million Aunt Kathys.
For real?
Dude, it's a thing. If you're Irish from Chicago, it's Kathy. There's a million Kathys.
It's like
Kathy's coming over.
Oh, which one? Kathy G, Kathy S, Kathy Q. So many Kathys.
It's like being Italian and having Uncle Tony.
Yeah, everyone
has an Uncle Tony.
Why isn't that a show where it's just six Kathys living in a house in Chicago?
It's the Kathys. Kath, yeah, Kath. Kath, yeah. Can you come in here, Kath? No, but I remember one of my aunts was like, she was like, why don't you do Ellen?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
But like, okay. Listen, I'm not dumping on her for saying that. It's just, man. Like, it is, I think people don't get that it's like, it's such an achievement to get to a place to even get on a thing that like when someone says like, can't you just do that? And you're like, you don't.
Like, do they think you're turning it down? Like, I'm too good for Ellen.
I texted Ellen yesterday. You know, I was like, can I get on the show? And she said, for sure. We just have to put you up after like Zac Efron and Brad Pitt. And
also, things are tight. Text me in a couple weeks.
D-level celebrities.
Yeah,
you know,
we got this one thing going on. Here's an opening for you on this day. You're like, oh, I got the About Last Night podcast to do on that day. Trapped. So I can't move it.
Anyway, L-Dog, I'll talk to you later.
Speaking of talk shows, I mean, talk about like surreal. Not only have you become pals with Jim Carrey, but like, to me, like seeing you, because I haven't seen you guys hang out, like, you know, doing the show or like any of the press stuff. So that was like my first glimpse of like seeing like rapport between
us together.
I mean, like, oh, they're homies. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that was fucking mind blowing to me.
It was cool. What for people that don't know, that's James Corden with him. Yeah.
You, Al Magical, and Jim Carrey to promote the show.
And then Griffin did stand up.
Yeah.
Which was even cooler. I'll tell you the funniest story about the whole thing was backstage, people are like, you know, you bring family and friends backstage, and their green room is huge. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's like a huge bar. Dude, it's got
it the same
be.
Setup for when, because you came with me to Ferguson, remember? And it was like, and it's at the same studio.
Upstairs.
So it's bigger.
So now they're upstairs.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And more hang through.
Dude, it's more. Yeah. It's a ton. And it's like this huge bar. And then people are taking pictures. And someone sent me a picture of me with Jim. But it was just like me and Jim on the couch because it was a two shot, you know? Mm-hmm. And of course, I posted it. And then Al Madrigal, you know, my boy, he immediately was like, what's up with you cropping me out of that photo? And I was like, dude, I didn't crop you out. But then again, it was just another comic giving a comic shit because it's like what we have to do.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
But you know, I was like, let me bask in like a moment of a two shot with me and Jim Carrey.
Come
on this.
Come on, right, dude.
No, I would, at one point, just you and Jim Carrey were on a television to millions
cool.
of homes.
It was so cool.
That's
pretty cool. But Jim is a guy that I think it's very hard to articulate. I guess I got to get it to it faster. He's just like he's profound and he's pretty prolific and he's very big idea, right? So he's like, you can tell he's always thinking. You can tell like there's not a lot of stillness to him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like when you're alone with him and you really get to talk to him, it's pretty amazing because he has a lot to talk about and a lot to say. Like in fact, like he goes through these like waves. I don't know if you know if you saw on Comedians in Cars, they showed his paintings. If you haven't seen that, have you seen when
he, I feel like I have, but
I did. He hopped over the gate, like over the gate to get into the car. He didn't go through.
If viewers get a chance to watch Comedians in Cars with Seinfeld, watch the Jim Carrey one. He takes him to his studio where he paints. Dude, he's a brilliant painter. He's amazing, and like he really goes through these chunks of time. I think just like any comic where you get like addicted to something.
Yeah,
you just get immersed in something. Because as a comic, you just get like so soaked into it.
Yeah.
And then he told me last time we were together, he was like, I'm gonna go to the Middle East to study Sanskrit. I just want to go like study Sanskrit for a long time. Man.
I guess when you have that much money and you can take that amount of time, it's like, oh no, I want to learn how to fly helicopters. Like you can take the time to do that.
Well, also when you've mastered, I mean, your craft, so you know more or less, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, TV and living. I mean, TV, movies, stand up. You know what I'm saying? So like. And to get as big as you can possibly get, I feel like, in the movie world, then, like, what do you... Now you're like, I want to go do... I feel like it's only natural to be like, what's on my list that I didn't do because I was so locked into my career, right?
Right, I think you just want to keep learning and changing and growing. And then because you're so dominant in one thing, you're like, well, what's another thing that, like, not a lot of people get a privilege to do and it would be cool to do? And I think that's just a thing. Now, there's also a part of me that was like, it's Jim Carrey. He could have just been joking.
Oh, really?
No.
Maybe.
No, he was being... Was it
tough to pick up his sensibility? Like, joke? Or would he make it pretty clear?
No, he's really clear about it. Yeah. He gives you like those eyes, those energy eyes of like.
Looks like a little kid when he gets ready to do a face or a voice or something.
Like when we did Corden together, we were backstage having so much fun. Like he did this intro with his blow up doll. And
it was hilarious. And then you guys passed it around.
And then, but afterwards, he was like joking still with the blow up doll. And they were trying to wrangle us. But it was like he's still a comedian no matter what. He'll never lose that like stand up comic. Awesome.
And I can vouch
just joking with us over and over and over. And they're like, guys, we got to go backstage. And he's still like making the arms move and joking about it. He's like, leave it in there though. Clean it up. Are you going to clean it up? If you clean it up, don't use that. It was just kind of like you can just see he's like, He has another bit.
Do you think
bit.
He was like that back in the day at the store, like the way we are in the parking lot and stuff?
Dude, of course.
Because he's still a comic. He wants to hang. Like,
but I don't know if he was one of those guys that just showed up and like split. You know how some like comics just come, do their sets, and leave?
A lot of times he wasn't
like that though, huh?
No, I mean, you could. I mean, I just feel like maybe he was. It depends on what level of his career he was at. But you could tell that when he was with comics, Al and I, and Griff, you could tell that he was just like, I'm back with a group of goofballs that thinks like a goofball.
Yeah,
and so
I saw
he can
him do
say
that,
anything.
Yeah, I saw him do that at the premiere too. It was at the after party at Cantor's, and you and Al Madrigal and Eric Griffin were just hanging out talking. I was kind of behind you because I'm not really in the club, but
I let you in, Brad.
Yes, you did. Thank you.
I was is my buddy Brad's here?
Yeah, and then Jim like came over to you guys because you see like, oh no, he's still a comic.
Yeah,
he just wants to hang.
I think he's like all of us. I think Seinfeld told us in some interview, and I can't remember what. I don't want to misquote it, but something to the effect of like you can feel the other comics in a room, like when you're at a party. I think it was
that
Seinfeld.
Was in Comedians in Cars with Rock,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
he just talked about like you can just. It's like for the rest of your life, you'll be attracted to another comic in the room. You'll just know if you're at the busiest, coolest party in the world, and the most famous people are there, the richest people, or the people that you should be talking to. You'll gravitate to another comedian because you're like, hey man, we're the same kind of weirdo. It just happens. It just is like a, it's like this bug that we all have. And I think that makes Jim, I mean, I know it makes Jim feel comfortable because when I'm around him, it makes me feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't act like other people are treating him. Do you know what I mean? In that moment, like people are nervous. So, and rightfully so.
Sure.
But there's like little girls holding clipboards in the back of James Corden, like, Jim, you know, I mean, they're nervous that it's like, I don't want to say the wrong thing. And
right.
I don't
and they think he's like going to throw something at them or like, it's not going to happen.
They're just doing their job. But I think like his ease is very obvious around other comedians that he's like, no, I'm just a fun, goofy dude. I'm just so happy to be one of the funniest people that have ever lived on this earth.
Does he have any interest in being on the show, or does he talk about acting again? I mean,
I think he had such a tough couple of years recently. Some stuff that we won't get into. I think his personal life was just a bummer, and he was going through a lot of crisis. So he didn't have any. That was never a discussion. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, without saying too much, but I just think he just wanted to contribute a lot of his brain to the project, which. You know, I think that's enough for us. That
well,
a lot
he was
of the
there.
Stories. Yeah, it's his life, dude. It's crazy.
And has he told you guys stories that didn't necessarily make it to air?
Dude, yeah, so many. I mean, when we sat the first time we had dinner together, we sat for hours, and he told so many good stories, and so many of them I just won't share, unfortunately, because it's just not public.
Also, even if you could, I almost wouldn't let you because I feel like
that was that moment.
This chapter of your life right now, and this whole experience, I feel like. Yeah, like the show is what you get to share with everybody.
Sure.
You know?
And they get
but
to
like
see
a lot of that.
Those.
Yes, but a lot of that shit, man, like keep that fucking upstairs,
in the dome.
Man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like for the, you know, I'm
sure or off mic, you know.
Yeah, when we close down.
Yeah.
But I think the stories that like I can share that are the stuff that he did share publicly that he wants people to know, which is parts of the show, which I think people will notice each character on the show on I'm Dying Up Here, they embody something from his life. So it's not like one guy from the show is playing Jim. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like Clark Duke and Michael Angarano, who play Ron and Eddie on the show, they live in a closet in the pilot. They have to move into a closet, into John Daly's closet.
Such a funny scene.
Well, dude, and Jim literally lived in a man's closet in West Hollywood.
Holy shit.
The change was, outside of his window, Eddie makes the joke, oh yeah, I live in it's his performance space where this bum takes a shit between parked cars. It's a pretty beautiful play. And truthfully, it was actually a guy who used to jerk off like behind another house. And Jim in the morning sometimes would like see this guy jerking off, and he would like stare at Jim while he was changing. And Jim was just like, well, you know, let him have what he has. You know what I mean?
I love how if he had put that in the show, there would be people going like, that's no one would believe that actually
totally,
happened.
Totally. I mean, there's so many stories that he did put in the show that you're like, wow, is that really? I mean, I think, listen, the show's going to face a lot of criticism from a lot of people, especially because it's on this high pedestal of like, you know, Melissa Leo's an Oscar winning actress and Jim's name. And
also, can I tell you why? First of all, Sunday nights, 10 p.m., I'm down at Pierre Showtime.
Yeah.
And Brad and I will, you know, unbiasedly say, maybe a little biased because it's our world, but it's so fucking good, and I think that's another reason why it's going to face some criticism, because I don't feel like, you know, I watch a decent amount of TV, and I rarely see a show where I get sucked in right away with the characters, the way it's shot. obviously it being our world, but even for not, man, stand-up is at such a boom right now, and there's never been a show that at least like tries to tackle the world and shows you just like even a little bit of like what the journey is like. And it's so reminiscent of now. And so to me, I was like, oh, any criticism is what I'm watching the pilot, I was thinking, is going to be 10 times because I'm like, I can't find anything wrong with this right now. And so I feel like the fucking shithead critics that are like, I need to get my, I can't just say it's great, you know?
Right. I have to be a critic. I have to be a critic. Find something shitty in
here. And I talked to Madrigal this morning on the phone about it because I was like, man, it's just, I don't read that stuff. That's not my shit. But then a lot of the people on the cast, you know, they pass the information back and forth. And
E. Griffin.
Yeah, yeah. And you get on the stream, dude.
It's tough not to, by the way. There's so many hours in the day and you're on your phone already.
I don't like to read them because it's just, what's the difference? But I think what I found from them saying stuff to me, the truth is a lot of critics say the same thing because they find it easy to be like, oh, we've seen this one before about comedy. We have Louis, we have Crashing, we have all this stuff. But I think it's so fucking bland to be like, heard the one about the bad comic? Yeah, another show about comedians. It's like, dude, show me a show that happened in 1973 at the beginnings of what comedy is today.
Show another show? Where's the other show?
Yeah. So I think like that kind of criticism. And then listen, they do a lot of story criticism apparently. Like, we're not satisfying people story-wise and the show is slow and it's not funny enough is the one thing we hear all the time. Well, the show's not a fucking comedy, which annoys me so much when someone's like, it's not that funny. It's like, dude, it's not a comedy.
Neither is NYPD Blue. Breaking Bad wasn't hilarious.
No. But didn't Jim Carrey do it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, but that's the irony is there's a lot of funny, beautiful moments in the show. And I think the comedy comes from the beauty instead of from forced. It's not a sitcom. We're not supposed to make it funny. There is a lot of comedic relief. But I just think for all the critics out there who, you know, who did take shots, I mean, it's just like, I guess that's their job or whatever, but
I want to read you one review on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a glowing review. Okay. At Puddin Seattle 69, who's the ginger? I want to face fuck him.
Dude, that's your mom. That's your mom.
Let me just click on it, and yes, it is.
It's your mom.
Well, she's very supportive. That's her way of saying great job.
So when's she coming down? I'm looking at Andrew.
When are you going down?
I'm going up. I'm going up.
I will say this, and because I've seen one of the things about a lot of shows that when they do stand up is the actual stand up isn't good.
Yeah,
and that's such
a hard thing to do though too. To be fair, yeah.
And the stand up in this show is good.
Yeah, it's fun,
I love that because it's like. God, like you watch Punchline with Tom Hanks and Sally Field. It's like those aren't funny jokes.
I don't know if they were so. And it does make you wonder, like, God, why would they not want to get that part right? If they're going to show that world.
Well, here to me was this is the case that I'll make for us, which at least because we will face a lot more criticism as the show goes on about stand up.
Your bit too in the pilot, real quick, was so great, and so you. It was so like. You know what I'm saying? Well, like, I feel like I was listening to...
They kind of let us go off. Mm-hmm. So they'd want us to keep it in that world. And that touches on what I'm going to say is, truthfully, people don't understand how hard it is to write comedy that's not from now. So a lot of these critics and people that are like, this comedy is not... It's not that good and it's not what I thought it would be. It's like... Were you around in 1973? Because if you weren't, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. So the writers on our show, like Marty Weiss, who's been around the game for years, they were there when the fucking comedy was 1973. So the stand-up of that time was so hard to emulate. Writers took a lot of time to try to craft these jokes that they would be somewhat appropriate for today and still be funny, but also ring true to the time.
Yeah,
that's so incredibly difficult.
Oh my God, dude. Tell any of these fucking people to try to write jokes for today on TV. Oh, you know, like what Pete Holmes has to go through, you know, in his show. You know, he also has to do stand-up that was of the time when he was starting stand-up, and then there's other stand-ups that are on it.
And he can't be too good when he's doing the stand-up because he's also an open micer, so he can't be killing.
It's such a weird dart to throw because you're bound to miss a little, but I think, like, on our show, we do the best job that we can of having material and characterization of the time that aren't going to Kevin Hart you. It's not going to be like, it's the funniest fucking shit. It's like, of course it's not. These are all pro, quote unquote, pro comics of the time, just like guys at our level that are working the clubs.
And they're
every
also
night.
Up and coming at
right,
the time.
Right.
So
not famous.
It can't be. I said this because what's the name of the actress that plays the
Ari Grainer.
Female lead? Yeah.
Yeah.
I walked up to her at the after party and I said, the moment in the pilot when you flip the switch on stage.
Yeah.
That is, to me, the most, like, if that doesn't work, if she's not funny after she flips that switch, the show doesn't work.
Yeah.
To me, that was the most important part of that episode, and she fucking nailed it.
And that
it.
Bit was great.
It's a great bit.
I thought that bit was really, really fun. Yeah, we have a lot of other bits on the show. Like, and we also did the thing where we wanted to stay true to real life, and the writers did. And so I work on a bit the whole season. There's one bit that you'll see me do a bunch because I'm fucking working on the bit.
Nice.
So we're not hiding behind the fact that like Louis gets to do a beautiful new bit every week on his show.
Yeah.
Which amazing. Like it's a fucking incredible stand-up show.
Sure.
And
but that's not
fuck Louis's brilliant to do that.
But that's
we
not
wanted
what stand-up
to show
really is.
This thing, which was like working out the groundwork. So you're gonna get a little tired and bored of it, and you'll see it get up and down. And I think that's kind of the beauty of this thing.
Totally. It's so different from the stand-up that people have access to, right?
Dude.
They're like, I want to go watch a quick YouTube clip, or I want to watch a special that's big and Netflix and all that shit. And yeah, and now you're getting like the behind-the-scenes thing. Like, hey, if you love podcasts, then you should love this because which podcasts have kind of taken over the, you know, I feel like one of the biggest now like forums for people who want that extra thing of like what's going on in the comic's brain,
totally.
You know? So... Mm-hmm. There's never been a show about it. There's been a couple documentaries that kind of loosely touch on it, but it's just a lot of interviews, not actually getting to see it.
Yeah.
Like, how much more of a fly-on-the-wall experience do you want?
This is the one. And for people, you know, a lot of people are like, I read the book. It's nothing like the book. And it's like, sure. What else? What does that have to do with anything?
And it says right in the beginning of the show, inspired by a book.
Yeah. But this is the thing about you that you have to remember is the more... I think what you said, and I appreciate it, means a lot. It's like, I think the better a show is or has potential to be, the more it's going to get torn apart because people are hard to just love things blatantly. It's hard for someone to just be all in because I think when something seems to be kind of good, they're like, well, I don't want to give it too much credit. Like,
Why is that? What's the psyche behind that?
I don't know. Like, I think...
Fuck, that's good. Why didn't I think of that? Or like...
I think it might be the fact that like we love when things are we love it when it's near what we like, but if it's exactly what we want, it's almost like annoying, you know, like if it's exactly the thing that you wanted it to be, it's almost like people get frustrated about that. Like, I think a good bad example is like you know, like all the nonsense that surrounded like Ghostbusters, you know, people, and like it's like, wait, back up, tell me what's wrong with it. Like, I just don't know why people got upset in the first place.
Before they saw one frame.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing, right? Yeah. Like, because it just sounds like a fun thing, and it's different, and it's reinventing something, and I just think we're quick in a public space to just go, I don't know, I don't know. It's just, it's almost like it's what you wanted. It's almost like you got the plate of food that you asked for, but you're like, I don't know about steak anymore. It's like, you asked for steak. Yeah. I thought you liked steak. I don't know, pork chops. And they get pork chops, and he's like, dude, I can't eat pork. It's like, all right.
You told me, which I thought was like super interesting, like during the filming, or maybe it was just after, and you were kind of taking a little break, maybe a few weeks off from stand-up, right? Or just, you know,
I took a couple weeks off.
Yeah. And which rightfully so, because your nights were late shooting, right? And then also what I found incredibly interesting where you were like, man, it's like the show's dark and like my character's like dark and like I'm like genuinely affected and I can't fucking hit the stage and just flip it back on. And I'm like, well, A, that sounds like you're locked in, which is dope. And B, that's fucking like that's some Heath Ledger shit, man, where you're just like. I'm so like it's going to take a few hours to decompress.
Yeah, it drags. Yeah. It drug me through the mud. People will watch and be like, "This guy's a sad piece of shit." I get beat up a lot until episode 6. Like at that arc of the season, I kind of get a little bit. You get to see more light and like, oh, there's light at the end of the tunnel for this guy. Like, cool.
But you're great at being like that, like a little jaded but likable. You know what I'm saying? Because you're
well, I think it embodies how everyone kind of feels at that level, and whether or not you're a comedian, I think you can relate to the fact that it's like, dude, sometimes life just kicks you in the fucking face over and over and over, and you're like, does this get better? And if you can't laugh about it, I think that's when it gets black. You know what I mean? Right now it's dark. Like it's dark, but you know there's a little bit of like sun. There's a little bit of moonlight reflection where you're
still
like,
see some shit.
I can see my feet.
Yeah.
But if you can't joke about it, then it gets scary. Then it gets uncomfortable, and my character just gets beat up. But you kind of still want to root for him because you're like, dude, I bet you got it in you. You just gotta like not get in your own way.
And your character is sort of a comedy purist. Like
he's kind of like a
loosely based on Bill Hicks, right?
I would say derivative or in paying homage to Bill Hicks, because Bill was just very opinionated and very hard-headed and had a very stubborn attitude towards the stand-up world, which I think are the comparisons that I have. I have a very like sardonic view on the world, and I think, yeah, he thinks he's very funny, and he doesn't, and he is kind of funny,
yeah,
and he deserves more than he's getting and in his brain.
And he hates the success that other comics get.
Yeah, and he hates the commercialism of comedy. Right. Like, it's almost, yeah, it is. It's a comedy purist. And by the way, the comedy nerds will fucking hate me, for sure. You know what I mean? Like, I'm playing them, so they'll fucking hate my guts.
It's like,
I can't wait to read the blogs with some fucking jack-off in his mom's basement. It's like, fuck Andrew Santino and the way he portrayed a stubborn comedian.
Funny, funny you say that. That exact quote is here, again, on Rotten Tomatoes, at PuddinSeattle69 says, this piece of shit, I can't stand him. I hope episode 2 is better. P.S. I still want to face fuck him.
Dude,
so,
that's,
you know, I don't know, man. Wait, you're going to get both sides.
Was it Puddin69?
Puddin Seattle 69, yeah.
Well, the first one was Puddin69 Seattle, I think. So one of them,
she might have signed up for another account. She's not tech savvy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She signed up for another account, but just switched
every time. Every time she wants to post, she ends up signing.
Would
a new
like
account.
To sign in? No, I'd like to make a new account.
Yeah, Mom, I know it's you, but the 69 didn't throw you off because you put your name and where you're from.
By the way, I love your mom so much.
The greatest.
The put. But anyway, yeah, I think like the one thing I've become comfortable with this show is that I'm going to face a tyrannical amount of criticism, and we will.
Yeah, but when have you not? When have, dude? This is you've already been on a show and been it, right?
So, dude, yeah, I was on a show that got fucking really. Actually, one of the guys from like Up Rocks or one of those guys, like he, and I think he still wrote like a really bad review on our show. But like, we met him at like one of these press parties, and he was like, he's like, well, you really redeemed yourself from Mixology.
Oh my god!
You cunt.
Like, you know,
just to say,
like how much, and he wrote in the article like Andrew Santino's actually got back in my good graces, which is so funny. It's just like they hated that show so much. A lot of the critics hated the show so much, which is fine, dude. It's a sitcom, you know what I mean? What do you want me to do? But I just think it's so funny that they hold you to a standard as if dude, I'm just a man who reads words that some other person wrote.
Yeah,
you know I'm not fucking. It's like changing science.
No, it's like they took it personal. Like, no, Andrew. Like would he do that if he sat down with Sylvester Stallone and being like, oh, it looks like after Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, you finally redeemed yourself. Which, by the way, I love that movie.
Yeah, no,
I
love
that
movie.
What did you? E. Griff was telling us some Melissa Leo just sound bites and stories. I mean, like that to me, to get to be on a show. Look, you know, got to the Heat, Sandra Bullock, won an Oscar, but I wasn't doing a drama with her. You know what I'm saying? So like, Melissa Leo won for a drama, and you're doing it like. So what is that? Are you? How are you watching her process? What are you asking her for?
I know the Griff story that Griff told you. So I won't go down that line just because I know how Griff articulates.
Yeah, but he told her like fucking, you know, blacker and like juicier and all, you know.
I feel like I'm just as black as Griff.
Okay, well, okay. Touche.
And Griffin knows. Griff knows that
has
we're both
seen a mirror. He's not black.
I'm not black.
He's black for a ginger.
I'm black for a ginger. He's Blinger.
That's gonna be
I'm
the
Blinger.
Blinger.
Welcome to Blinger's Pool Party Podcast.
That's going to be the name of your next special, Black for a Ginger.
Black for a Ginger.
I like that.
Actually, I pitched Orange is the New Black, but Showtime shut that down real hard. No, but I think with Melissa, like, yeah, dude, like unequivocally, like, and I'm not, this is probably gonna not cool to say, but I'm not an actor's actor, right?
Yep.
So like, I don't know a lot of actors, right? Mm-hmm. But I knew Melissa, but like, I can appreciate her from my own world as a comedian who's like an admirable people that are great at their craft, right?
Yeah, just people that are really skilled.
Amazing. Like, there's a lot of actors that I don't know that people are like, how do you not know who that is? I'm like, dude, I'm not good at that. I'm not really good at that. Like, knowing the ins and outs of, like, people who did a play in New York for 4 months and he's, like, the biggest name.
Yeah.
There. But someone like her, who I did know and I was a fan of, it was really, you know, it was a little intimidating, right? And then when we started to work together, you could feel right away that, like, nothing about someone that's very good's process is intimidating when you actually get to work with them live. The idea beforehand may be, but then when you actually get to do it, you're like, oh, they're just so good. All I've got to do is fucking turn it the fuck up and be as good as I can, and they can do the rest. Because she carries a lot of weight. So
And she'll and
you can feel it.
And she's gonna make the other actors better around her.
Totally, dude. It's like getting to do just like layup drills with Jordan. You're like, I can touch the backboard. You know what I mean? Like
I'm sure. Yeah, I never thought that.
I'm sure the
you can see the backboard.
You could put me with anybody. I wouldn't be like, I can dunk.
You guys
like,
got one of those mascot trampolines?
By the way, Brett, if you could dunk.
Oh my god.
I mean, world changing.
I know, man.
I mean,
that's it.
I feel like that's going to be one of the upsides of like the climate change debacle. Like, it's going to be like dwarves can dunk all of a sudden.
Dwarves can dunk.
We're going to be like, what happened to gravity? Dude, fucking global warming, man.
Global warming. I mean,
Who cares about
in that case,
ice caps.
I'm going to drive a fucking semi truck. I don't care. Yeah.
That's the official press release. They're like, listen, polar bears are dying, but apparently dwarves can dunk now.
I think the world would be okay with it. I think even the most staunch liberal would be like, dwarves can dunk. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Like, you know what? You guys fuck electric cars. Diesel.
Elon Musk, go fuck yourself. That's what we're trying to say.
Yeah, basically.
Yo, quick side note, and then we'll get back to that. But that, first of all, that's bonkers to even be in the same like scenes.
One-on-one scenes with her were crazy, I will say. And I'm sure when people do see the one-on-one scenes, they'll just be like, the redheaded guy's, he's not bad. He's kind of keeping up.
You and her had some juicy shit throughout the season,
right? We had some super moments where it was like, I have to get real emotional with her. And it was...
These must have been some of these days you were referring to when I was like,
yep.
How you doing?
Yeah, there's a
like,
chunk of the season that I won't talk about, but there's a chunk of the season where I go through a fucking real tough time, and I think...
Awesome.
Yeah, dude, I did take it home. I definitely...
Well, how could
it's
you not?
Hard
you have to be in that mind space.
So
you have
hard.
To be present in that moment. You can't just flip the switch and then not be that.
And here's something I don't know if I've heard people talk about a lot, but it's something that like you really feel is if you're a loser on a TV show, if you play a loser or if you play someone who's losing that episode, people treat you like a loser. There's something very interesting about the world of acting where you become your character in that moment, right? And I'm not saying you can't step away from it. You know, when you're having a cigarette or having lunch with these people, they're still people. But there is a vibe that is created around you, especially if the episode is written in that format, right? So if 4 episodes in a row, I'm getting fucking beaten up, and I was, you feel that presence. And it's hard to describe. It's not like
if you're good, you do.
It's not your castmates. Your castmates aren't going like, what's up, fucking dork? Like, you're not getting pushed around by them, but there's an innate vibe because they're in their moment, so they're trying to live the truth of whatever they're saying. You know, like Ari Grainer, when her and I are getting into fights on camera and we're a couple and we're in this emotional fucking tug and pull, she feels that way about me because I'm still Bill.
Yeah.
So when camera's cut, she's not like, you want to go grab lunch? Like, it's just more of like a... go your own way a little bit,
right?
And so that's something that I really learned heavily on this show more than anything, because I've only done comedy until now.
Well, and I know I told you this at the premiere party, but you're a fucking good dramatic actor.
Thanks,
and
man.
I know people shouldn't be surprised when comedians are good at being dramatic actors, because that's what we do on stage. We're playing multiple characters and we're playing dramatic roles. But yeah, there some of the scenes in the pilot, I was like, fuck me, Anderson Tino.
Well, thank you. I would love to fuck you, Brad. You know that. I've been trying to fuck you for so long. That's what's so annoying. He says that stuff to tease me because
he's here for the podcast to plug the show in the special.
By the way, that's what dwarf dunking really is me and you.
It's the new teabag.
It's just a sex move you do down in Mexico. It's a good try. You know, works out. did that surprise you when you're like, oh shit, I can do this?
I had one director tell me when we did shoot, like, why one emotional scene when I did mixology, and one director did. He said, "You know, if you worked on it, you know, you could actually be a really good dramatic actor." And I was like, "Oh, fuck you," because I thought he was shitting on me a little bit, as a joke, And he was like, "No, I'm being serious." And then later in the day, when the scene was wrapped, he said the same thing again, as if to like plug it in my head. He was like, "I'm being serious. You should really think about it." So I was like, oh, dude, I don't know. That's not a world that I want to go out for. I just want to be a comedian, and I want to do comedic stuff on camera all the time because I want people to come to my shows and be like, that's that funny guy from The Funny Thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Which is hard now, because now I'm like, thank God for my stand-up special on Showtime, because it's like, I don't want someone to, I think it's hard for people to watch I'm Dying up here and then be like, I gotta see this guy do stand-up. Because it's
about
not
that.
Necessarily a funny transfer. It's more of like a painful road that you watch.
Sure, and
you're
like,
going,
wow, is that the material he's gonna do? Is that how he's gonna act?
I don't really like all that abortion stuff.
That meet and greet stuff after the show is gonna suck.
Yeah, it's gonna suck.
Is he gonna wear those clothes? Probably not, man. Different time period.
Right.
Dude, you inevitably become the character that they think you are. I mean, isn't that, that's just like a facet of the acting world, is like, people just think you're that thing, whether you like it or not. And so you just hope that whatever you play on TV is somewhat transferable into the real world of like, yeah, he's not that bad of a guy. Like, yeah. If you
now your character's fun, so it's like, you know, yeah.
If you have to play a really evil person all the time, I imagine that's difficult for those actors to play like always the bad guy.
Oh yeah, dude.
Because someone in public has got to be like, you're a dick, dude.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm with my kids,
dude. Somebody might, yeah, somebody very easily might see
a dick
on the street four episodes in and be like, cheer up, Bill.
Yeah,
and you're like, dude,
I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah. And then you say that,
and then they're like, dude, he's really bad. Yeah, he must be worse.
He got very aggressive. He got very aggressive.
He must have got denied a dwarf dunk.
I'm coming out of like a smart and final or something. They're like, dude, what happened to Bill? You good, Bill? I'm buying meat for this cool podcast pool party that I'm doing.
And your and your special, which is called Hometown Advantage.
Home Field Advantage.
Yeah. Aired on Showtime, but you can get it on the app. And
yeah.
They still
put it up there for a while, which is kind of great.
Yeah. That's Showtime,
by the way, replays the special.
Shit.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
Congratulations, yeah, man.
Big fucking deal.
I was so happy to get it done with, dude. I was like, it's such an anxiety-inducing process, but I'm happy.
How many years in the making?
You know what's so funny is, like, I really didn't want to, for the big chunk of my career, I didn't want to do, you know, I've been doing stand-up for 10 years or so, I would say, because it's so hard to count your years, because you're like, at the beginning, you're just fist fighting to do anything.
Right, you do like doing like one open mic a month or something.
And you're trying
like
to pay rent.
Yeah.
So it's like, are you stand-up? You're like, when I can be, because it's so hard.
Yeah.
But of the 10 years of my life, you know, like I think for the first 5 years of the stand-up career, I didn't want to even try to do an album or any of that stuff because I was so scared. Like I was just like, dude, I don't want to put any of that stuff out there. I don't know.
Good for you to have that awareness.
Well, I think it was actually, you know, like ignorance is bliss kind of type thing, because I just was like, I don't want to do that. I wasn't confident enough. Yeah. Even if I, you know, a lot of guys were confident early on. 1 year in, they're like, I got two CDs. And you're like, what? Yeah,
I remember those guys.
Taping my DVD special at the Ha Ha on Sunday night, like, 6 p.m. You going to be there?
You started 6 months ago, Mike.
Yeah, but people are saying I'm progressing.
I got four hours.
Jack's only charging me $100 for the DVD.
He's selling it back to him. No, I think
so inside baseball,
but
so true.
I know. I think I took a while to want to get there, and I actually did a headlining day at the Improv, which we've all gone through here locally. You do, you know, a headline day
at the Hollywood Improv.
Yeah, the Hollywood Improv, and I did a headline day, and I had like Showtime and Netflix and HBO, or a bunch of guys came out to see me. And the conversation kind of just led to one thing or another. The Showtime thing was just completely coincidental. That it all kind of happened.
Oh, really?
Simultaneously.
That was before the show.
It was just after the pilot was cast.
Wow.
Yeah. Because
Showtime took the gamble of like, well, this pilot could not get picked. It might not get picked up, and it might not be a thing we want to do. But it just kind of, everything was kind of kismet. It worked out perfectly, and they were excited to work with me. And Netflix was like, you're not funny. And I think that
you're not Jerry Seinfeld, who is
like,
releasing a special next
they're
week.
They're like, we're doing famous people, and you're a loser. Yeah. But thanks for the appetizers and beers.
We give 40 mil to comics who aren't having moms comment on their Rotten Tomatoes page that they want to Facebook them.
But we'll give you $40 if you get out of our face.
We'll give you 2 months free.
Just two
months.
I tried to put in that code, and it didn't work, Netflix. No, so it just kind of was kismet. It just kind of worked at the same time that the Showtime thing was coming out. And then, of course, when I did mine, I shot mine a year ago, which was also the anxiety, because they were like, we're going to hold it till the show comes out.
Yeah, how is that? Because
it sucked.
I mean, the material you have now that's not your... The special is phenomenal. Let's just say that.
Thanks.
I told you that.
Yeah, watch
You shot it hometown Chicago at the Vic Theater.
Yeah, man.
You have the artwork done by who?
Dave Klock, who does all of the posters for Meltdown here, Meltdown Comics for the Nerd Melt.
Dude, it's unbelievable. People will see when they watch it, but tell people what it is.
Well, we're going to put it on shirts, too, because I want to be able to give it to people.
Yeah, dude.
Well, Dave Klock, I essentially told him, who's a brilliant artist here in LA, who does all these Meltdown posters for Nerdist and all that stuff. He's brilliant at drawing these animal characters. And I was always like, dude, I really want to incorporate the city of Chicago sports teams, because growing up, I'm a sports fan. It's called Home Field Advantage.
Yeah. Sure.
And I said, I really want, I said, I gave him an image of what this bear I found online. And I go, I want a bear in a lazy boy chair, eating deep dish pizza, drinking an old style beer, and his cubby bear son next to him with a Blackhawks headdress, the Chicago flag on their wall, and he's wearing Jordans for the Bulls and White Sox for the White Sox. And I swear to God on my life, a day later, Dave was like, what do you think? And I was like, this is fucking unreal. He's like, yeah, I just have to touch it up and curve out some stuff and do some coloring changes.
Also, do you want a West Hollywood bear or like an actual grizzly bear?
Yeah.
He initially drew just this big burly guy kissing me on the nape of my neck.
It was Mervis, Ryan Mervis.
Which I framed at the house. Yeah. I have that one too. Yeah. But he turned around that drawing in like literally a day and a half.
That's insane talent.
Well, dude, he's such a fucking great artist. And I was literally like, dude, thank you so much. I know this is a lot of pressure. And he's so like nonchalant. He's like, yeah, man, cool. Have fun with it. And so I asked Showtime if we could put that up in the background. And at first they were like, how do you want to do it? Like, what is it going to look like? Like,
right.
What scale do you want this on? When you watch the special, it's like so overwhelming, but I'm happy about it. We printed it on this beautiful canvas and it's like 25 feet tall by 25 feet wide. And I have it at my house, which I don't know what I'm going to do with this fucking 30 foot banner.
Garage door.
Yeah. Yeah.
How is that though? Like you were saying, and Brad can attest to this too, like having the special come out when it does, months after you shot it, and then you have all this other material, or even maybe tighten up some of the material that's on the special, and you're like, ah, fuck, well, I can't go back and do reshoots, can I?
I think I had a lot of advice from comedians above me that said some really cool shit that I had said. They were like, how do you like the special now that it's going to come out? This is months ago. And I was like, you know, I don't know. Some of the stuff is evergreen. There's some stuff that's a little bit more timely, and I'm a little bit bummed. And they were like, you're going to be bummed no matter what, dude. You're not going to... If a comedian says like I'm in love with my special, it's the best, they're fucking kill them. They're because they're a weirdo and they don't have any clue about what's going on. Like you should always want to do new shit and improve your work. You should be happy with what you've done to a degree as much as you can be.
Because you were in that, but you were in that moment. At
that was
time.
The time.
And that was you then.
That
right?
was it. Yeah. Yeah, that was it. You might have said some things you regret, and might have said some things you don't agree with anymore, and that's that's life. But I think the advice that I got from older guys was really cool about, you know, just kind of letting it go and letting it be. And I did now that I'm like, you know what? That's right. Fuck it. I'll move on. And I will brag a little bit and say that the coolest thing that happened to me was Burr tweeted at me, and Burr tweeted the night it premiered and said, saw Tantino special. He fucking killed it. Go
watch.
Whoa. Yeah, it was great, dude.
And that's not a guy that you asked to do that.
Like, how dare I even think of it?
Man, that's crazy.
No, so yeah, and he did that, and I obviously reached out to him and thanked him very graciously and told him how much that meant to me. And of course, he was like, the coolest thing he said back was, he goes, yeah, man, it's, he goes, I just want to say congratulations and do yourself a favor and go write a new hour. And I was like, that's great advice. You know what I mean? For him, it was just like, you did it. It's awesome. Don't give a shit about anything negative. Don't suck into all the positive. Just let that sit. Enjoy that moment. And now go write a fucking new hour and keep this train of creativity moving, you know?
Do you get hyped up from it when you see it, and just the energy and all the support and outreach? Does it make you go, fuck, now I want to get another one? Or
I thought about tweeting or texting this morning or doing something on Instagram, and I haven't done anything today because this weekend was so big for me for the show and the special. And I thought about writing something genuine and being like, I really want to thank the comedy community for all the support, because I did get an overwhelming amount of support, which kind of like really touched my heart, that it, like a lot of people did a lot of things, like people that aren't really like close to me that retweeted or tweeted about
it.
So
many people were posting. Yeah. My Instagram was flooded with people.
I'm sure there's a lot of
pictures.
Other comics that are like, fuck Santino. If I see another fucking thing, look at Neil's nodding.
Yeah, listen, dude. that was one tweet from me.
Yeah.
You don't have to bring it up.
No, I think that's the natural thing of comedians to be like, ugh, if I hear another thing about this fucking guy doing this fucking thing. But when you're on the other side of that and you feel that support for the first time, because I've never put out a special, dude, it feels
and to be validated by
feels
your peers.
Awesome. Yeah, it's cool, man. It's very, very cool.
Go ahead.
My first initial reaction was someone tweeted, they were like, someone texted me and was like, Santino, dude, you're getting a lot of support and a lot of good response from people around you.
Yeah.
And I was like, they must all know that it's bad. That's like the only way a comic would be like,
sure.
They're probably like, this is going to suck.
Everyone
so
watch it. Everyone watch this so everyone can be like, well, that's not a good comic.
They must know it's dog shit. So they're like, no, watch this and then go watch a better one when mine's out. Yeah.
Did you have teachers or friends or from college or high school or reach out?
I think my Facebook has a bunch of different... I'm bad at Facebook because I don't really do it anymore because I have like just a fan page. So I don't see other people's shit.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like whenever I go on Facebook, it's like sad to just see my shit. Do you know what I mean? That's when Facebook gets sad, when it's like, these are all my posts.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? At least with Instagram and Twitter, you get other people's worlds.
Yeah.
But
right.
With Facebook pages, sucks, because you're like, I don't see anybody else's shit, so I don't go on that much. But I get a bunch of like people from high school that are really supportive that were at the taping, dude.
Oh,
I had so many people that I went to high school with, or that are from the Chicagoland area, that were like, we were there. I was there with my wife, dude. So much fun to see it again. And
you love that. because I'm
dude, it's so great to fucking for people to re, you know,
but to have
to re-meet me again or whatever you want to call it.
But you
that.
You didn't mind at all having like that many family and friends there to watch.
Oh, it. Dude, I fucking,
or you wanted it.
I loved it. I just well, I mean, you know how it is when you're on the road and stuff like that and you're like, can you make sure they all come to one show so it's not every show? I've got like people from, it's like, these are your cousins' friends. And
yeah,
these are,
right.
Like, well, I like to do
all
it
the Kathys at one taping. You don't want that.
I like to just say, like, you guys can all come to the Saturday early show or the late show. You guys had to all pick one show. Because I don't like the scattering of having.
Yeah, because then everyone needs a moment after every show.
I got to go say hi. Yeah. Right. But for them, I was like, everyone come to the first show and you don't have to stay for the second show. I don't, you know, don't expect you to, but like, I really just want everyone, if they could make it to one show together, would be dope. And mm-hmm. that was cool. And you know, when you, when people see the special, you know, my grandmother brings me out on stage.
So great. And Brandon Dermer crushed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Dermer directed
shot it.
It.
Yeah.
Also watch his show this summer on Vice called What Would Diplo Do? That's going to be so
yeah,
fucking
dude.
Cool, dude. Yeah.
Directed the whole thing with James Vanderbeek.
Yeah, James Vanderbeek. Him, to see him and Diplo and James Vanderbeek become like good buddies and go to Vegas is so funny to me. Dude, it's so
dream.
Funny.
Yeah.
But he's such like a humble, cool dude, Dermer. So it's just,
I loved his
like,
cameo at the end of the special.
Oh, it was perfect. Well, of course, I was like, when we were taping those on the front end and the back end, I do like a little baby intro. They were like, we got to put in this footage of the outtakes. And so we did. And then Dermer was going to cut himself out of the ending. And I was yeah. like, dude, we got to leave that.
Come
thing.
On, man.
He was like, oh, we don't really need that piece. You know, like we can kind of shorten down the front of the back or whatever. And the editor, this girl, Brenda Carlson, who's over at Comedy Dimex, was like, I mean, it's funny. And I was like, all right, leave it. She was hard. I tell you who's harder, the hardest person to impress out of all the comics opinions that I don't give a shit about, you know, comics I can hate on it. I was more worried about the editor, Brenda. I was like, God, does Brenda like it? Because she sees
every frame,
every special,
20 times.
Dude, and I watch her listening to it over and over again. Yeah. And it's like, blah, blah, blah. And then I was watching her do that. I'm like, you must hate stand-up
oh,
comedy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she was just like, no, it's not that bad. She's like the most chill, cool.
That's who you want to do that.
Dude, yeah.
You don't want somebody that loves it too much or hates it.
Well, what I said to her, I go, you've seen so many specials, you must know everyone's fucking stupid jokes and quips and like their little mannerisms.
She goes, yeah, but I can only recite them like this.
And she goes, yeah. And I go, so like my special, I know she's done like Louis, all
you
this stuff, Gaffigan,
yeah,
mm-hmm. And I was like, just tell me that it's,
how does it hang?
Just tell me that it's fine. You know, like I didn't want her to
isn't it
fake
funny
it.
How much that opinion matters?
Well, I didn't want her to fake it and be like, it's great. You know, I was like, right. Just tell me truthfully, yes. Like, is it fine? And she goes, it's good. It's better than a lot of the specials that I see. And I was like, that's good enough. I'll take that. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Take that.
And I think that could have even been her being like, be nice to this guy. I hate his right. comedy. Be nice to him.
Yeah.
But she was
what
cool.
if she was like, but I hate your voice. So I'm trying to figure out a way to take that out and put in another one.
And were you like, involved? Get out of my office, and then spits on yeah. my face.
Were you involved in the editing?
No, dude. I kind of left that to, I mean, okay. You know, I kind of, the way we did it was just kind of like, they were like, can we put out a first cut and then see what you think of it? And I was like, totally, yeah. Dude, yeah, let's see it. And she did a great job, and then I had a few different pieces that we tweaked afterwards, but for the most part,
gotcha.
For the most part, I just was like, use this show, and you know, if there's anything we need to take out, I had to take out some stuff that I talked about on Rogan for Showtime Legal, but I mean, other than that, it was kind of like, they were so cool, they didn't mind anything that I said or did, and they were just like, yeah, it's good, we'll put it out, we'll pump it out. So
that's great.
Are you, I know you're gonna go on the road now for a little bit, but
yeah,
I want to talk about some previous road experiences, which was your trip over the holidays
mm-hmm.
to Hong Kong.
No,
Japan.
I went to Japanese, dude.
Fuck.
In fact, just
Brad went to Hong Kong.
Brad went to Hong Kong. Yeah, I was in Japanese, as I called it on the internet.
And you're, and I know I told you this when we played golf the other day, your Instagram story was so funny.
Unbelievable.
Thank
just
you,
every...
That was...
Every post, it was just a... haters are going to say you can't...
Haters will say you
whatever
can't...
Whatever the hell.
Haters will say that you can't swim in the water in Japanese, and I would jump in the water and be like, fucking haters, dude.
It was like, it made me go, oh, this is why Instagram is great.
Yeah,
this is what you do with Instagram stories.
Yeah.
You don't fucking go, got a new protein powder today on the beach in Cabo. Say what up, ladies.
I think it all started because somebody texted me and was like, what are you doing in Japan, you fucking loser? Like a friend was like, what the fuck? You didn't tell me you're going to Japan. And I think I was like, why are you hating, brah? Like just as a bit. And then I kept texting that, and then I became like, I was like, I want to do this fake thing where I'm getting a lot of hate for being
in Japan.
Like, which obviously nobody would hate me for being in Japan.
Thing for yeah.
So then I made up this whole Instagram story where I'm just going around like to all very iconic parts of but I called it Japanese. I'm like, dude, haters won't understand in Japanese. In Japanese, you're allowed to do this. Yeah, dude, that was my, that Japan was like life-changing for me. I know that sounds so corny, but it was unbelievable. I had never been to Asia. Yeah. And never been.
You hadn't been on a plane before.
Never been on a plane.
Yeah.
We took a boat. We took a boat.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, seems too expensive, but.
Well, you know, we rode it, so I think we got there just in time. Took about 17 months. after I shot the pilot of I'm Dying Up Here.
22 months ago.
I took off in the boat.
Probably would.
Now, we landed in Japanese, and then we went around Tokyo. Tokyo was the illest, and we took a train down to Kyoto, and then flew to a little island called Ishigaki, which is in the Okinawa Okinawa Islands, and it's parallel to Taiwan. So the water's like crystal. It looks like the Caribbean. You're like, I'm in Japan, and it's a trip because you're like, this feels like some crazy like Indonesian island or something. It feels like you're way more south than you are.
And I was surprised when you told me, you're like, I was like, hey, so do you have some shows down there or whatever? You're like, no, I just fucking went to Japan. I just took a vacation, Japan, like a normal
dude.
Person.
Yeah. How, well, that's with comics, you're like,
yeah,
you know, any time a comic says, dude, I'm going to Ireland, they're like, what show is there, who books it? And you're like, I just want to go see Dublin. And they're like,
I'm also a person, remember that?
Isn't there a show in Dublin though? I feel like, let me get on the internet.
Isn't there like Tommy Momanigan?
The Mahoney's. Like, Mahoney's have a show. They have a show.
They booked that pub. Are you gonna go to a pub? Yeah, man, I'm flying all the way out there.
Going to do a pub.
To do a pub.
17 people are gonna be there.
Did you want to do a show though when you're out there? Because Brad doing stand up in China was,
well, dude, a bunch of guys, like Eric Andre and Sandy and a bunch of guys were in Japan at the same time.
Oh, really?
What, like almost a year ago now?
Yeah.
And you know, Sandy was like, dude, you should do shows. Like, a bunch of guys did shows, a bunch of people did shows, but like, I had zero interest in comedy. I just wanted to take some time to just like,
how important is that,
feel Japan? Yeah, because I think it would have taken away from like knowing Japan, because you know how it is sometimes when you're on the road and you're like, you kind of just lose sight of the fact that you're in a cool new place, that you're just like, well, I'm in a hotel, I'm going to jerk off, and I'm going to get high, and then I'm going to go to the show, and then I'm going to go home, and I'm going to jerk off and get high. And
go back to the show because I'm high. I forgot I already did it.
Did I do this set already? But like, I think, you know, I just wanted to feel Japan, and getting to feel Japan was just like one of those things where I was like, it was remarkable, man. It's also, for people that are listening, I highly recommend it. It's the most expensive place I've ever been to
in my
life. Dude, Tokyo is insane expensive.
Wow.
Hotels are such a fucking ripoff. The food is so expensive, but you're like, you're there, so you're like, whatever. So you're just doing it.
Yeah.
And you're spending money so gleefully. And here's the other thing. Whenever the exchange is so big, you know, when it's a huge difference, you kind of get lost sometimes because it's 110 to 1. Do you know what I mean? So like, lunch is like $7,000 and you're like, this is funny. You just don't think about it.
Right, you don't think of it in American dollars.
No, like, it's so annoying.
Because it's that drastic that you're like, because like when you go to Canada, it's close enough
to where
you're actually thinking about
it. It's like, I think they're off by like 30 cents or something like that.
Yeah, but when you go to Japan,
$110 to $1,
right,
your brain just kind of, you have to turn off to numbers. You're just like, I don't want to do the math every fucking time I sit down.
Yeah.
You'll know. Some places you sit down, you're like, no, wait a minute, that's not right. Okay, that's too much money.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just kind of get used to the spending. So, yeah, Japan definitely takes advantage. But the illest thing I did, we took the Shinkansen, the fastest bullet train Tokyo to, dude, it goes like 260 or something like that. I might be wrong in the number. I should probably, someone will Google it and be like, he's an idiot. But
what's it called, the
245 Shinkansen bullet train.
Okay, Adam's gonna look it up.
But you take a bullet train from Tokyo down to Kyoto, and I gotta tell you, dude, you think you know, you're like, how fast, what'd it say?
320 kilometers. There's kilometers.
Yeah, that's about 250.
375. No, wait. 275.
275.
Test runs have reached 275 miles.
Yeah, so I think on average we were, I think it said like, because you slow down a lot to go through towns, because you're like, you can't just fly through a town at like 275.
But make, dude, a house explode.
I mean, someone's just trying to dry their laundry outside. It's like, every fucking time. No, but you think you understand like how fast that's going, and then you get on that train, and dude, for the first like 20 minutes, you kind of feel sick, because it's so fast that your face is like, and it's silent. You don't hear a fucking thing.
That's just magnets.
Oh, it's just so quiet. Nothing. Yeah. That's the thing about Japanese fucking people, dude. They're so polite and sweet in public. Not like Americans where we're like eating chips on the subway like, hey, Steve! They're so polite. They don't yell. They don't talk loudly on the subways.
Right.
And this is on the bullet train. There's no difference. Commuter train. But like, dude, they're so respectful of your like peace that nobody is a fucking obnoxious dick. I see why when people come here and they're like, Americans are rude. And you're like, we're not all rude. But then you go somewhere else and you're like, yeah, we are kind of loud and do whatever the fuck we want all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like we were just eating. It's like some woman is on the phone and she's like, uh-huh, uh-huh. It's like, dude, your other people are here.
Right.
People do that on airplanes. You're like, it fucking blows my mind.
Like, dude, this is
no, yeah, yeah, no. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm here. I landed, but we're still sitting on the, what is it, a tarmac or a tarmac? What, no, I know. Debbie's there. Say hi. Put her on, you know, I'll put it on speaker. Debbie! Debbie! You bitch. No, I'm here. Yeah. No, there's a guy farting next to me the whole plane right now. He's looking at me. You're buying your own business.
I had a guy on the plane. We're fucking like taxiing to take off. And the flight attendant being like nice, she's done this three times. And she goes, sir, you have to get off your phone. And he knows shit goes 1 second to her. And she's like, and luckily the dude next to him goes, hey, we're going to fucking take off. Like, as if to say, listen,
back
dude,
it up.
Just be cool. Can you just be respectful also, of this thing that we're all agreeing to?
To me, that is grounds to get dragged off a plane.
Yeah. Totally.
If you 1 second, that's like the opposite of one. That's like $1 somebody on Price is Right. 1 second to a flight attendant. Guess what? You're being a dick.
Yeah, you're being such a dick.
Yeah, and it's like, unless you're on the phone with Trump trying to get him to not press the red button.
Right.
Like, then who gives a shit?
Wouldn't that be funny, though? That is who he calls. A random
and
dude.
He hangs up and goes, fine, I could have solved everything.
Yeah.
But I guess enjoy your diet, Sprites and peanuts. Debbie, this guy's going to get us free peanuts. I do want to ask before we wrap up, in defending Ginger's getting in trouble.
Yeah.
Kathy Griffin held up ahead of Trump.
I know. This has been such like a back
has it,
publicly.
And look, we never even talk rarely about like current events, but you're just, I love talking to you about anything. I was telling you this the other day. And so I was like, oh, as soon as I saw it, I was like, you're the first person I thought was like, oh, I wonder what he thinks about that. Because well, I know.
Here's what's insane. The only thing, like, here's what's so annoying. Two things. I'm annoyed that I'm talking about Kathy Griffin. Like, that's just it's annoying as shit that I have to, like, give her
any I'm annoyed that it took you this long to talk about it.
Right.
It's annoying that I have to give her any credit. You know what really makes me mad? Like, fuck you, Kathy Griffin, for making me feel like I have to defend Trump. That's, like, the craziest part of the whole thing.
Yes.
You know? That I feel like I have to fucking defend this guy because you're such a fucking dumbo that I have to be like, dude, you can't do that to Donald fucking Trump.
Yeah.
Like I did on Rogan asked me about it. We talked about it on Rogan's podcast. And what I had said was, I was like, could you imagine if they did that to, if she had done that to, if someone had done that to Obama, right?
Yeah.
And a bunch of Rogan fans tweeted and were like, they did that to Obama, you fucking idiot. And there were like these iconic pictures on the internet of people burning effigies of Obama, right?
Right. But not,
which is true.
Yes.
But it wasn't a famous person didn't do it. So all these fucking people were coming back at me.
Photo shoot.
And I was like, no, dude,
millions of
go get a famous photographer. If a famous photographer and a famous fucking a famous person in the public social eye held up ahead of Obama, dude, the world would have shut the fuck. I mean, that's insane. So like, I have to defend the Trumpism for a moment to say like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't hold up the head of a president inciting violence about the guy that runs our country. You can hate him. I don't care. I don't fucking like him either. But you can't incite, take someone's head off that runs the free world. You can't do that. Or actually, how about this? You can do that. But then you're going to face a lot of shit on the other side.
You
can say whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. This First Amendment thing is great. You have a free speech. People also have a fucking right to just shit on you mercilessly and ruin your career because that's the risk you're going to take.
Yeah.
For me, it's not even it's not what she did. It's the fact that the content isn't even funny, right? So like if there, like, have you seen that mannequin that went around, or the sculpture of naked Trump that went around Los Angeles?
Yeah, that's funny.
Funny. Hey, dude, it's just depicting him, a fat, sloppy, naked guy. It just so happens
which
that he didn't have
probably
clothes.
Would be if
totally.
He was naked.
So that's a funny, artistic move to shit on the president, right? That was a clever thing that they were saying.
No violence toward it.
It's just saying, look at this fat slob.
Here he is in human
form. He probably
form.
Didn't even, he doesn't get comedy, so he's probably like, I got the best fat, naked statue out there. Nobody's got a fatter, better naked statue than me. Fatter, better naked. That's my pitch in 2018.
Trump has a podcast called Fatter, Better Naked.
Welcome back to Fatter, Better Naked.
Fatter, Better Naked pool
we'll
party.
Where we eat Doritos, buck naked.
All day.
But he, I just think like the
there should have been an attempt to humor.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing is like, again, why am I talking? Kathy Griffin's never been funny to me. So
and also she's
like
shock value. Like, look at what she does. She criticizes celebrity news and celebrities and just pop culture.
She made a fortune criticizing what people wore. That was one thing when Joan Rivers died that a lot of people were very heartbroken by Joan Rivers. She was a fucking amazing person in the world of comedy and I always appreciated Joan Rivers. However, there is a moment in the Joan Rivers zeitgeist of my brain that's like, yeah, dude, she did make make money on a show criticizing outfits? Like, fucking, let's not all pretend like we're on our high horse all the time.
America.
At one point, she did some, I mean, when she got going and on Carson, like, was
fucked. Dude, but she's one of the best stand-ups of all time. But at the same time.
But a chunk of her career was being like, look at those pants.
Yeah.
Right.
And people, you know, would you get them at that fucking cunt store? I don't know, man. I'm not Joan Rivers, but I didn't write for her. But
cunt store on Melrose is actually a good shop.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, that is
a lot of bracelets.
Yeah, and that's also what a great example of just the business. Like,
yeah, dude.
Joan Rivers, the top. And then, and look, she probably still was like, I'm happy I'm working. But like, dude, you go from Carson and then that's just how this business, like, you just don't know.
That's just how it goes. I just feel like the business is filled with a lot of hypocrisy and like the irony of like people who are very strong feminists, like someone like Kathy Griffin, who has like, who is clearly a very, very outspoken feminist and has a huge proponent of the gay community, who is outspoken about supporting her.
Who can't wait to go to her show now and hear her talk about this.
Yeah, dude, it's just so funny. It's like, that's what's going to happen now. It's going to earn her a little bit more respect. But a lot of her career is based on shitting on other human beings. Like, I don't know where that comes into the world of like being fair and balanced and a feminist when like they just shit on other women. Like, I just think
I know
there's
a
weird blurred line now about what you can and you can't say. And so like for me, I'm just gonna keep saying whatever I want, and I'm sure people are not gonna like a lot of it, and I don't fucking really give a shit. Like, I don't I'm gonna stick with it. I'm not out for blood to fucking hurt people's feelings, but like, I'm gonna say some controversial shit if I think it has a message to it. And if you don't like it, fucking too bad. So that's the point that was made about her. A lot of comics were like, you got to support her because comic can say whatever they want. It's like, sure, dude, but just know
people can respond.
You can get ripped to shreds for it. That's the only thing you
got
to know.
Just and I've said this before. I've got a folder on my computer that is labeled tweets that'll end my career.
Isn't that amazing?
And it's just like,
I'm gonna get to that at some point.
Yeah, and like sometimes I just write something and then I stare at it and go, yep, that one in my career. So that's going in the folder.
What's great about that
I do them all the time. That's in my draft.
But you know what? You're preventing yourself from censoring yourself and putting some sort of filter on, because you never want to feel completely right. Like, for what we do, to be in a position where you're like second guessing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, get to a point to where you trust yourself so much to where you're like, I don't have to second guess. I can just like be in the moment and hear myself. But sometimes, you know, you slip up.
It comes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it comes out. I think the older you get in comedy, the more you learn. You're like, whatever negative tweet that I have that I'm thinking about pushing out, I bet you it's not worth it.
Yeah.
That's just the bottom line.
Yeah. It's like, what's best case scenario? I get 100 retweets, 150 retweets.
Yeah, but guess what? You get 9,000. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario. Oh, no. Yeah.
Worst case scenario is your career is in. It's done.
It's got to be not worth
perception.
It.
Yeah. People being like, man, why do you fucking put that? Like, well, I do that a lot. I see people post stuff and I'm like, oh, fuck. Guess what, man? You could have just said that in your head.
Sure.
You said it out loud on Facebook, and now I go,
say it to your buddy. Say it to your buddy, dude. Call your buddy.
Have a venter. We all need a venter.
Call your buddy. I would advise any comic get married for that reason. Because I can call up my fiance, just be like, could you believe this fucking...
Listen to this fucking shit.
She goes, it's crazy. You didn't post that, did you? Okay, great. Get it out.
She has to just sit there and go, uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah, you guys are crazy. Keep in mind, you guys tell jokes for money. Yeah. Okay, I gotta go. People are dying.
By the way, that's a great sketch of like for a comic dude. Just like, if you're thinking about posting something that you think is funny but is probably going to end all the shit for you, call a buddy.
Call a buddy.
Yeah.
And then you just hire a call center of buddies. Yeah. What's up? It's your buddy.
Hello, this is Greg. I am from Austin, Texas.
I am your
buddy. What is the thing you want to say on the Twitters?
Greg, I feel like I feel like you're from Tennessee. You sound like a Tennessee guy.
No. I am Greg. I am from Austin, Texas. They have the bats that go under the bridge. Okay. That's what I know in Austin,
Texas.
Well,
Greg, I'm going to kill myself.
Well, Greg, I'm going to kill myself. But also, I'm thinking about putting Mike Pence's body on Donald Trump's... taking a Trump head and putting it on a Pence body. And I want to put like some fun meme like, you know, these guys suck. You know what I'm saying?
What do you think?
That is absolutely 100% hilarious. Don't ever do that. Don't ever post that on Twitter. Don't do it.
I just want to keep hearing you talking that accent.
Were you going to do it? Don't do it.
It's Greg, right?
It's Greg?
Greg from Austin, Texas, yes.
Okay.
Greg, what's the best part about Austin? Because you've lived there your whole life, right?
Kelly Underwood.
Kelly Underwood.
Did I say Kelly?
I think you said It's Carrie.
This might be, it might be the worst accent I've ever heard about.
Yeah, that might be just about. Welcome back to Brad Can't Do Voices. All right, Showtime special.
Put that in the folder of now I can't go in India.
That's it.
Home Field Advantage.
Fuck yourself.
Home Field Advantage. Showtime.
Showtime, Home Field Advantage, and the show is called I'm Dying Up Here on Sundays.
Sunday nights at 10 p.m.
You got
great.
And the special you can get on Showtime.com and on demand.
It's actually, yeah, it's on the app. It's fuck on, it'll, they'll stream it again too. I mean, they'll show it again. They'll air it again. But for now, you can go on Showtime.com and watch it again if you have the app. Or any of those services where you can jump on.
Speaking of watching the special, one new comment on Showtime.com at Puddin' Lake Forest Park, 69. Again, just watch the special. Just bought my plane ticket. Ready for the face fuck. Where you at? Question mark. So,
can you respond for me real quick?
Yeah, for sure.
Can you type this down? And so I'll say, make sure to bring double black dildo.
Yep. Oh, she already responded back. Brought seven. Is that too many? Heart, heart, question mark, smiley face.
And then write,
yep.
Def not.
Great.
Def is short for definitely.
Perfect. And if I can talk to you for a second, Andrew, that's my mother that you just joked that back.
Dude, I would never have sex with your mom.
Again.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or AboutLastNightPodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.